Okay, we're back on the record of in the appeal of Z4 Corporation, OPA-PA-09-012. It is 351, and Mr. Alcantara was recalled as a witness by the OPA. You were excused. Okay, when your last block of the stand, you were basically under oath, and you were advised at that time that you could be recalled as a rebuttal witness. You're still under oath, okay? And actually, let me see. Let's re-swear the witness. Could you would actually excuse, okay? Last hearing, just out of an abundance of caution.
Please take your
full
name.
Okay,
Anderson. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the
thank you, Mr. Alcantara, for coming back. I'm the one who's calling you back, not the other two. So I appreciate you coming here again. And, I was just trying to get some clarification regarding the whole DOE construction-type project. It's my understanding that this particular project is from a bond proceeds. Is that your recollection, that the money is coming from bond proceeds?
That's correct.
And have DOE performed other construction projects through the bond?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you recall what they were?
There was quite a few projects that we did. And in fact, we did a lot of construction contracts based on also the Typhoon Bangsamwa campaign and all the typhoon restoration.
So when you did these particular bond construction projects, did you do this on your own, or did you work with DPW?
This one we coordinated this with the Tenguchi Roof Company, which was our engineering firm, the one that we hired to do all our engineering and engineering assessment and all that.
Okay, I'm glad you used the word assessment. And looking at the law that authorized the bonds, and this is Public Law 2967, and I'm just going to read, because it's not a part of an exhibit, I'm just going to read a portion of this. Under Section 2, it said, funds provided to Guam Public School Systems from the bond proceeds for capital improvement projects and facilities repair shall be held in reserve until such time as an assessment of the facilities is conducted by an outsourced engineering firm. So is Tenguchi Roof the one you outsourced this to?
That's correct.
Okay. The superintendent, I'm continuing reading from the law, the superintendent of education is authorized to use bond proceeds for the outsourcing of the assessment. Upon completion of the assessment, the superintendent shall ensure that the funds are expended in accordance with the recommendations contained in the assessment. So, do you know approximately how many projects might have been were to be funded from this the bond proceeds?
I am not sure, ma'am, because there is. I know that they paid the Tenguchi Roof to do all the assessment, and this was one of the projects that came out of that assessment.
Okay.
I don't know anything about the others. I think the other one was Antolan Middle School, but I left before that was.
And under your tenure, then, because this was passed.
Yes, that's correct, ma'am. That's under my tenure.
Okay. And okay, this was passed back in 2008, so it was a little. Because you retired when again?
August 2009.
Okay, so Antoine Middle School was funded from this?
It should have been funded also on the same...
Now, did you handle the construction, or did this go through DPW?
No, that's also under DOE.
Under DOE. My recollection from some previous meetings was that there was supposed to be a memorandum of understanding for the bond project with DOE and DPW to assist in these particular projects. Are you familiar with the discussion in that area?
There was a discussion on that. In fact, they actually, DPW did a lot of our projects. That's for the opening of the schools, and I don't know if that's part of the bonding funds. But there was quite a few projects that were given to DPW to manage. But DOE procurement wasn't involved.
Okay. So in the past, DPW was involved in some aspects.
In some aspects, also DPW was involved in. An example is the sewer system at Harper Little Elementary School. They did the engineering and the procurement of that project.
But when DPW was involved, was there a memorandum of understanding written?
I think there was a memorandum of understanding, and this was the time when Wilfred Afferty was the...
That's my recollection of St. Wilfrid's time.
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. So there may have been one?
There may have been one, and I'm pretty sure there's got to be something in writing, because there was only three individuals that were actually responsible for all those projects that were given to DPW. That was Wilfred Afferty, which was actually the director at that time, Andy Youngerell, and...
Is that Andy Mangaro from DPW?
DPW, yes. Okay. And also the deputy director, which is at the administration, which is Joey.
Joey Anderson.
And those were the three that were particularly involved in the contracts.
And so just again, to your recollection, it was more for the opening of schools as opposed to the bond project.
I don't know if that was also part of the bond. The money that they were using, because there was a lot of projects that was given to them. I don't know if it was the bond money or the compact impact money. I'm not aware.
Okay. But under your tenure, going back to the Antoine School, you said that it was your understanding that this money came from the bond?
Yes, my understanding.
But you did not involve DPW?
No, because we had outsourced an engineering firm.
And then therefore, in the case of Ocean View Middle School Gymnasium, you did not need to have DPW?
No.
And that's because?
Because the engineering firm that we hired was supposed to give us all the required documents, plans and specs for that project, because we hired them to do all the big projects for the department. $50,000 and below is not, it's a small project, so we don't require engineering firm for that. So this particular project, we did require an engineering firm because we did not go to the DPW.
To your recollection, does DOE have some more projects that might be funded through the bond? Do you recall?
I think Antoine is one of them.
Ocean View?
Ocean View is one of them. There's got to be more than that, because...
But you don't recall which one?
I can recall the number of projects that will be,
I mean, not the number, but which schools? Do you recall maybe?
I've got a list of all the constructions that we did and all the schools. And, if you're referring to construction, it's repairing, renovation, and all that for each school. And we've been doing a lot of construction were canopies, you know. We constructed canopies. We built the sewer system for Antalan Middle School. So those were all under the construction contract that we had.
And those were all handled by DOE?
Right.
And only the majority of which you did not involve DPW?
No. The ones that DPW had were actually the ones for the opening of the school. And that was a year ago.
And just to repeat, there may have been a memorandum of understanding. You do recall discussions of it. But did you yourself ever see the memorandum of understanding?
No, ma'am. We weren't involved. Procurement and actually financial affairs weren't even involved in those projects.
So that was handled primarily by the director, DOA, Mr. Mayor Boothman?
Yes.
And the deputy, as well as DPW, Mr. Mangrell?
That's correct.
Okay. And then just to clarify, so DOE procurement does have experience in conducting its own construction projects?
Yes, they were doing construction before I came in.
Even before you came in?
Even before I came in.
And when did you come in, Mr.?
I was in procurement 2004.
Okay, so prior to 2004, DOE was handling its own construction projects. And to your knowledge, DOE is continuing to handle and was handling their own construction projects.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's all the questions I have, and I'm sorry to have called you back then.
Do any of the parties have any questions for this witness?
No, sir.
Ms. Mooney? Yes, ma'am.
No.
Okay. Mr. O'Connor, you are fully excused at this time.
Thank you very much.
Your testimony. Oh, you okay?
No.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Do we need a break before closing arguments, or are you ready to go into them?
If I could have a brief break to set up a projector for a PowerPoint.
Okay. Would that take you about 5 minutes or so?
We have all of the equipment.
I figured it'd be
just around the wall.
We have a screen if you want to use one.
Okay. Well, let's take a brief 10-minute break, and then we'll go into closing argument. Okay? All right. We're off the record at 4:04.
Okay.
And back on the record now? All right, we're back on the record on in the matter of the appeal of Z4 Corporation. That's OK-P-09-012. It is 4:22 p.m. We're going to begin the closing arguments as this is Z4's appeal. Mr. Jackson, you have the floor.
Thank you. Let me start with a brief summary. The appellant C4 has the burden of proof in this matter to show that the actions were arbitrary and capricious. And what we've seen over the course of this trial is that this is a good definition of arbitrary and capricious. GSA is revoking Z4's bid and the award to Eons was arbitrary and capricious. And before we even started the trial, it appears that the DOE now agrees that Eons' bid cannot support an award. And you may remember, the DOE filed a motion which stated, and I quote, "At later points in the history of procurement, Eons Enterprises was permitted to submit 2 additional written clarifications, brochures, literature, and to list different materials. And these submittals were, and these submittals by Eons Enterprises were reviewed by Cambridge Hoover, continued to not meet the technical specifications of the project." So based on this statement, it's clear that the DOE agreed that Elon did Camp Support Award, and that revoking Z4's bid at this point and giving it to Elon was arbitrary and capricious. Now, there were a number of irregularities in order to this procurement. But just like the Ocean View Middle School, Jim, this ISV can be fixed. Well, as far as specific actions that were arbitrary and capricious, first, the GSA had no authority to take over this ISV. The GSA is limited in their authority to contracts for supplies and services. Now, the GSA, they reversed the findings of GDO employees. Third, the GSA failed to find an explanation for $105,000 worth of product. And then, the GSA also afforded Neon's multiple opportunities to submit documents explaining the terms of its bid, even though these were due at the time of opening. Now, the DOE's defense, we made mistakes, and we should cancel the bid because of our mistakes. That is essentially the extent of the DOE's defense. We're coming before you today to request the GDOE just simply affirm the decision it made several months ago to award this contract as Z4. Elon's ultimate bid was properly rejected for failing to comply with the instructions of the ISB. As noted earlier, Elon's ultimate bid cannot support an award. However, Z4's bid can. Now, let's briefly go down the issues that we submitted at the beginning of this appeal. A threshold issue has come up, and that's whether GSA even had the authority to enter this procurement process, and whether Elon failed to fully explain terms of its ultimate bid. And third, we'll look at whether the revocation of the award to Z4 was arbitrary and capricious. We're fine that the revocation of the award was arbitrary and capricious because Elon could not fully explain the ultimate bid, and the performance bond was not late. These are the two explanations provided by GSA. However, we'll show you that these are simply not justifications for revoking the award to Z4. First issue, whether the GSA had authority to enter this procurement process at all. Now, if the OPA finds that the GSA didn't have authority, then all of GSA's actions in this matter should be set aside and the award to Z4 should be affirmed. We saw that GSA lacked authority to revoke the award. Rob Schreier, when he was asked if GSA had authority, he said, no, GSA doesn't usually handle construction projects. When we asked, what authority does the GSA have to handle this procurement contract? He says, not sure. He says, normally there's no authority to handle construction projects. When we asked Pete St. Nicholas, the number two in charge of GSA, we asked him. He says, there's no authority for construction contracts. Well, what about repair projects? Could this be a repair? And he says, repair projects are simply for minor construction projects, limited to $15,000. And so it's clear this project cannot be considered a repair. When asked, he said, no, this is a construction project. We also saw that GSA entered the procurement process at the very end, when it was already finished. The only thing they were waiting on was the bonding. In San Nicolas, he says, GSA was involved after Elon's filed appeal. And we just saw Mr. Faji said the same thing. that this was basically said and done. The DOE made its decision, and they're simply waiting for the bonding. Mrs. Foggy, this afternoon, she said, GSA has authority to procure contracts for supplies and services. GSA has no authority to procure construction contracts. When asked what some of the projects that were authorized under, she mentioned that a repair for a window or something of that nature. This clearly exceeds any project that the GSA had authority to enter or to even oversee. And the reason they say this is because bond procurement law is very clear, and it clearly defines what agencies are responsible for what contracts. The procurement law states, GSA is limited to procurement of services and supplies. Now, the reason the DOE can handle this project, why they were handling this project before, and why Mr. Alcantara said that we handled construction projects, is because they are exempt, specifically exempt, from centralized procurement and can conduct procurement for construction contracts. And both of these are found at 5 GCA 5113, and the second one is found at 5 GCA 5125. Now, there's some mention at the beginning of the hearing about an executive order, and the GSA was to conduct procurement for the GDOE. However, when questioned, the representative of GSA said that, well, this executive order is not even applicable to this procurement matter. Now, we just heard Mr. Fodges say that GSA was assisting the GDOE, but that's not really what happened here. You had the GSA issue the notice to stay after awarding the contract, or after the DOE awarded the contract at D4, the GSA issued the notice to stay. It wasn't the DOE. When EONS filed its appeal, GSA was the one who interacted with EONS and Taniguchi and Ruth. This wasn't, these weren't activities done by the DOE. This is the GSA. And finally, when the award was revoked as D4, that came from GSA. GSA issued the revised bid status document. It was GSA who revoked the award to D4. So since GSA can't enter into a construction project or handle construction, procurement for construction services, GSA's actions should be set aside because they lack authority. Accordingly, the OPA should affirm the award to D4. And that's why we're here. We're simply asking the DOE to affirm its decision it made several months ago. And significantly, the GSA isn't even an interested party anymore. They have no, their supervisory authority was revoked, and it was only 6 months. So it's difficult to say what the real story was behind that. But after six months of the superintendent saying, you know, we need some help here, they said no more. They said, we need to do this ourselves. So now, basically, the only agency before the OPA is the GDOE. And the GSA no longer has an interest in this IFB. So accordingly, we request that the OPA allow the DOE to continue the procurement as planned and as it set forth in August of 2009. Second issue, whether EONS fully explained the terms of its ultimate bid. Now, this is really the meat of this appeal, and a lot of issues have kind of been raised, but this is really the crux. And if the OPA doesn't find that Eon's fully explained the terms of alternate bid, then the award to D4 should be affirmed. The IC clearly required a full explanation, and that was due at the time of opening, and indicated that a failure to explain the alternate bid will result in the rejection of its bid. And this explanation is due at the opening. Now, there's some questions about meeting specifications, but all descriptive literature must be furnished as part of the bid and must be received at the date and opening for the bid. And this is, all bidders clearly understood that these documentation is due at the beginning. Now, Eon also did it simply didn't contain a full explanation at the opening. And the parties that found this were Taniguchi and Ruth. And even the DOE procurement officials, Mr. Alcantara and Albert Garcia, they both said that, no, they didn't fully explain the terms of bid. And even the DOE now believes that there wasn't full explanation. I mean, in the motion to dismiss, they said that Eons was given several opportunities to submit descriptive literature of the products, but even the architect found that the brochures and literature were unable to determine what products they were being bid on. Now let's take a quick look at what Taniguchi and Ruth said in their first evaluation. They said, in many cases, catalog material provided incomplete, not translated, or otherwise inadequate for the level of review needed for approval. This isn't saying that they met or did not meet the specifications. They're saying they didn't even provide the information so we could determine whether they met the specifications. At a minimum, they have to provide documentation so the architect can say, what is this product in this alternate bid? What is this? We're not even saying that whether they met or did not meet the specs. Taniguchi and Ruth are saying we can't even decide whether you met the specs. And that's really why the ultimate bid must be fully explained. More statements from the first evaluation. Additional information required for review. No information provided. Inadequate information submitted to determine construction and if we meet windows. This isn't even saying whether they met the specs. This is saying, at a bare minimum, you didn't provide information. Now, the reason this is important that an alternate bid provide information is that, let's take a look at one product that was found and failed to explain but received conditional acceptances. So this, I'm not even talking about a product that they didn't find meet specifications. The athletic flooring was a product that Taniguchi and Ruth said, well, you know, we don't really have the information, but we're going to assume it's acceptable. Substitution, made in China, catalog data not translated, so cannot compare to specs. Sample, but they said samples appear acceptable, but there's no information provided. So they ended up, they say appear acceptable in the given condition of acceptance. But here's the important part. This is a product that didn't have translated language materials. This product is worth alone $109,000. This is the reason why alternate bids have to be properly explained, because if there's later in the process that it's determined that this product doesn't meet the specifications, then what is going to happen to that difference of $109,000? Now let's take a look at what the GE official said. Mr. Alcantara said Eon failed to fully explain the terms of its alternate bid. Albert Garcia, on July 30th, he said Eon failed to fully explain the terms of its bid. Now let's take a look at GSA's position with regard to the explanation. GSA in the ABC report says the DOE has been disqualified properly for failing to explain, excuse me, the DOE had disqualified the offering bid submitted by Eons for failing to explain what they were bidding on, when in fact Eons did explain and justify what they're offering on their offering bid. And this is confirmed by the GDOE's architect. That's what they're saying. They're saying they provided an explanation. That's what Taniguchi and Roof said. But it's clear, as we just saw, that Taniguchi and Roof didn't say the products were explained. Taniguchi and Roof noted several different times that the information provided was not in English, or that it wasn't even provided to begin with. So we're not even talking about whether they met the specs or not. We're just talking about whether they met the requirements of the IFB to submit explanatory documents. Again, this is what Taniguchi said, no information provided. So it's curious to see how the GSA said that Taniguchi Roof found it a full explanation. Because clearly, Taniguchi Roof did not on July 16th. Now, then, GSA later gives Eons three opportunities to submit information. But at this point, we're not talking about meeting specs. We're talking about just submit documentation of what the products are being offered in the alternate bid. GSA says, Taniguchi Roof, they reviewed the additional submittals. Please provide additional information to clarify your bid submission. They're just saying, just give us the documents that were required at the beginning. The second review by Taniguchi and Roof on September 16th, this is what they said. They said, for one product, physical properties for this material are not submitted, and therefore comparison is not possible. This is saying you have not even given us documents to determine whether we can make the determination that it made the specs or not. Second, the data sheets they provided are mostly illegible. The information they provided is not organized and is insufficient to allow us to determine if the hardware is compatible. So they can't even reach the question of meeting or not meeting the specifications because they didn't provide the documents that are required. Eons was simply unable to explain its alternate bid. Its response on September 22nd, after the second Taniguchi and Roof evaluation, they said, well, we'll be completing the additional submittals when required if the project is awarded to us. That was their response to Taniguchi and Roof's second evaluation. They said, well, you know, we'll just submit these documents if you give us the project. So at this point, the GSA, this is what they're confronted with. They said, well, we don't even have the full documents to determine whether they're going to meet the specs or not. So what should we do? And this is that document we were just talking about. It was a memo with GSA that was signed by Pete Sam Nichols. They say, well, what do? We don't have the documents. We can't determine whether they meet the specs. And that's when Rod Trias signed for Billy Cruz, and he said, well, why don't you just have them promise that they'll meet the specifications? And they basically awarded this contract on a promise. They said, well, if you send us a letter saying that you will meet the specifications, then we'll go ahead and give you the contract at this point. They basically waived that requirement. Taniguchi Roof, they said over and over, not enough information, despite three separate opportunities. Eons was only able to explain after three opportunities. Now, this is even closer to the GSA's position. Taniguchi Roof confirmed full explanations, that just doesn't make sense. Taniguchi Roof said over and over again, you didn't give us enough documents. Albert Garcia, on August 28th, he said, after further review, it was determined that during the bid opening, Eons Enterprises did in fact submit and had given a full explanation. Now, mind you, this is after his boss is now the GSA. Testimony of Albert Garcia, when he came in, he said he was stand corrected. He discussed with Claudia Asagi about the explanation. And the two of them said that the itemization was sufficient grounds. Peter Nicholas, the number two in charge of GSA. He said that he found a full explanation after reviewing the itemization. And but he also testified that the itemization failed to account for $105,000 of product. This is basically where Eon submitted a number for different product, but didn't explain where this was coming from, who makes this product. And then he said to find the difference of $105,000, they had to review the submittals in Chinese. Mrs. Faji, this afternoon, she said she reviewed this itemization and that the itemization also failed to account for $105,000, but she said she didn't pay attention to the difference in $105,000. These kind of activities should not be encouraged. Now, let's look at the DOE position on the explanation. As we said earlier, the DOE itself said, at a later point in history of the procurement, Eon's enterprise was permitted to submit additional written clarifications. And the submittals were by Eon's were then reviewed by Evolution Group, and it continued to not meet the technical specifications. At no point has there been a full explanation. So GSA acted arbitrarily and capriciously by revoking the award to Z4. GSA reversed employees with DOE, and it relied on unsupported reasoning. They said Taniguchi was found for explanation. Taniguchi didn't find a full explanation. They said over and over again, we don't have enough. And they relied on explanation that failed to explain $105,000. Also, what's interesting about this itemization, and perhaps this is why Albert Garcia's piece was corrected, is that this itemization wasn't even submitted with the alternate bid. This itemization came upon in the middle of the procurement process. That itemization that we reviewed, it was submitted by Eons as a part of its appeal. That document was pulled from Eons' appeal, and Eons itself said, this is our explanation of our alternate bid. They never said it was submitted at the time of opening. They said, this is our explanation. But even if this explanation was submitted on time and with their bid, it failed to explain $105,000. These types of activities should not be encouraged. So when GSA and the agency report and the bid protest say that, well, Z4, your bid was rejected because, or we revoked the award because, well, in fact, they did submit an explanation. That's arbitrary and capricious, because it's just not true. Third issue, whether the rejection of Z4's bid was arbitrary and capricious. Now, to determine whether the revocation of the award was arbitrary and capricious, we need to take a look at GSA's grounds for rejecting Z4's bid. First, they say no award had been made. Now, we'll go into the idea of whether the award was made, but that still wouldn't by itself allow GSA to give the award, take it away from Z4, to give it to someone else. And again, Eon failed to fully explain the ultimate bid. We're not going to go back into that because we just saw that clearly is not true, and that cannot support a rejection of Z4's bid. The third, they said that, well, Z4, we're rejecting the bid because your performance bond is late. And we'll get into that in a minute. First off, GSA's position is inconsistent to start with. They say no award's been made. And they also say the performance bond is late. Well, that begs the question, if there's no award, then how can a performance bond be late? They're saying, we didn't award you the contract and your performance bond is late. arbitrary conclusion. It's inconsistent. Now, we submit that there was a lawful award of these four. The bid status says that the award is made to the lowest and most responsible bidder, D4. Signed and executed by D4. There's a notice to proceed. You're hereby notified to commence work on the above contract on August 10th, and you are to complete all work within the contract in 180 days. Signed by D4. There's several, we heard testimony from several people say there's bid status, notice to proceed, or awards. We saw contract, Albert Garcia, Brent Triad. Now, back to arbitrary and capricious. GSA itself, in this grounds for appeal, it contradicted itself. In the bid process rejection, right, it says no award had been made. But, and we discussed this today with Ms. Afaji, attached to the October bid protest rejection letter was an October 29th letter of Albert Garcia. And on the letter, it says, after including information on the requisition and making the award to Z4. So at one point, they're saying, well, there's been no award, but then to support that statement, they submit a document of their own employee that's saying, well, there was an award. So what is it? The point is that their justification relied upon in agency report is insufficient to support the revocation of the award. So arbitrary and capricious is inconsistent and contradictory. Now one thing that's interesting is that the bid protest and the agency report, they both said there's no pre-construction meeting. And this afternoon, Mr. Fadi said, there's not been an award. There wasn't a pre-construction meeting. And she asked us to try it. But we were, about a month and a half ago, we saw a parade of witnesses that came through the door, and they all said a pre-construction meeting was held. They approved. How about Garcia? Rod Trier, in fact, I believe Rod Trier said there was two pre-construction meetings. Mr. Valencia said there was a pre-construction meeting. That's D4. Mr. San Nicolas, the number two in charge of GSA, he said, yeah, there was a pre-construction meeting. The point is, that is also insufficient to support the award, or the rejection of the award of D4. Now, let's take a look at the... Now, let me just start again. Whether or not there was an award, I mean, this is, it's not really the dispositive issue, meaning that even if there was an award, that wouldn't support awarding the contract eons later. So it just does not support rejection of D4's bid. Now, let's take a look at the second ground for rejection. Z4's performance bid bond was late. Well, we submit that it was not late. The DOE procurement regulation said a performance bond shall be delivered at the same time as the contract is executed. It doesn't say at the time of award, it says when the contract is executed. There's a letter from Alpha Insurance to the DOE, the bond was approved. And the DOE acquiesced to Z4's request for an extension of time to submit the bond. If you look on the notice to proceed, it's dated August 10th, but it was issued after Z4 submitted its request for an extension. It was signed by Z4, I believe, on the 18th, and they submitted their request mid-August, or the 14th or 13th. So since the notice was issued after the request for extension, the DOE implicitly authorized that extension. Now, we heard witnesses talk about how the bid bond substituted for the performance bond. Mr. Alcantara, he said the bid bond was held for security. And there was a cashier's check for 15% of $810,000. So it was sufficient to protect the DOE during the preparations and during the the prison structure mean those kind of activities? Mr. Rocheri said a bid bond can be used before performance bonds are received. And significantly, Mr. Tri, he said, not submitting a performance bond would delay the signing of a formal contract and purchase order. It's not grounds for rejection. The point is that there's sufficient, the bid bond sufficiently protected the DOE at all times. Now, significantly, there was no request from the GSA or the DOE saying, well, before you need to come down and sign these documents, we've been waiting for this bid, we've been waiting for this performance bond. We never called them down and asked to sign the documents that it was due. So at this point, the GSA is a stop for rejecting the Z4's bid for this reason. Now, significantly, Z4 was able to get a difficult federal bond. Now, let's take a look at Alpha Insurance, what they said today. They said that Z4 was already a qualified company. They said that the bid bond issued to Z4 pre-qualified Z4 for a performance bond. And they said there's no problems with Z4's bonding in the past. They had always submitted their proper qualifications. And they knew that Z4 had federal bonding on another project. So that's likely why they issued that letter to the DOE, because they knew that Z4 would get the proper qualifications and that there was really no problem. It was just a matter of submitting certain documents. Now, briefly, Z4 is approved for federal bond, and as Mr. DeRoca said, it is very rigid examination qualifications. Rural qualifications may require a local bond. Now, a brief summary of the issues. Revocation of Z4's bid was arbitrary and capricious. One, GSA lacked the authority to even revoke the award. Two, the performance bond wasn't late. And third, EM did not fully explain the ultimate bid. So those are the grounds that they used to justify the revocation of Z4's bid. But as we can see, these cannot support the revocation. So the award to Z4 should be affirmed. Now let's take a look at the DOE's defenses in this case. Now they can say, we made mistakes. We need to cancel the ISB now. We need to start over for the third time. Well, that's not in the best interest of the territory. The DOE, last year, they asked for help from the GSA because they themselves said, we need to start getting these projects moving. And Ms. Afaji, she herself testified to the importance of getting this Ocean View Middle School project to break ground. She said, these kids are without a gym right now. We need to have this project started. Now, let's take a look at the DOE's last-minute appeal raised before the hearing. They said that, well, Z4 and Neon, they both submitted the same list for the school award, and Kenguchi Ruth's school award was unacceptable. So they both didn't fully explain, so they're both no good. Well, the difference is between Z4 and Neon is that Z4's bid can support an award. On the other hand, Neon's ultimate bid cannot support an award, and it's clear that the DOE is in agreement at this point. The GSA found that Z4's bid conformed to the specifications. The bid status. Z4's bid is due to high price. They never had any problems with their bid. They never said it didn't meet the specifications or that it otherwise was non-conformance. Z4's bid can support an award. Z4's bid wasn't rejected for failing to explain. They fully explained their bid. Kenguchi Ruth never found that the information submitted by Z4 is inadequate. And that's a different difference with a distinction. Basically, the point is that the DOE and the GSA waived any minor informality with Z4's bid. And this was, and any product of Z4 that didn't meet was only worth 1% of the total price. It was a scoreboard worth about $8,000, and this is a project about $810,000. And we saw a contract that, yes, these four bids substantially complied with the IFB. And as noted by Mr. Ruth, and later on, they will be able to cure any minor discrepancy. Now, Eon's bid can't support an award, and we've already talked about this. They were permitted to submit two additional written clarifications and to list different materials. However, at no point did Taniguchi and Ruth find that they could meet the technical specifications of the project. Eon failed to fully explain the falsity of the bid even on the third time. Now the DOE, their main defense is the DOE made mistakes. Earlier they attempted to poke holes in its own procurement in order to cancel this bid instead of simply affirming its own award to Z4. They said that, well, there's inquiries that weren't responded to. Well, let's take a look at these inquiries. One was from Eon asking questions about the bleachers, but that wasn't a problem product for them. Their bleachers met the specs. Second, they asked for an extension of the due date for the bid opening. And then they asked a question about a liquid damages clause. But none of these have any bearing on this appeal. Second, there was an inquiry from Z4 in the timing of submission of brochures and literature. But obviously, Z4 and Eon both understood that these would be opening. It was both submitted. There was an inquiry from Dai Young, but an extension of due date, no response to inquiry, no site visit. But there was no protest from Dai Kyung. Importantly, there's no bid protest at opening. So any problem with the process, they write in that opening. And the only one protesting the process of this bid at this point is the DOE. They're basically protesting their own procurement process in order to get out of their obligation. The ultimate bid process. They're saying that there's a problem with this ultimate bid process, but no bidder even raised this issue. This was an issue raised for the first time on the eve of the hearing date. But what's important is that this process was effective. Z4's bid met all specifications except one at a reasonable price. The only one protesting the ultimate bid process is the DOE. Mark Bruce, he came and talked and testified, and he said that, well, these aren't usually used for construction projects. But he never said anything to point to the fact that this would be an illegal process and an otherwise improper process. The one thing that he did note was that procurement officials determine whether bidders comply with the IFB. And here the DOE on several occasions said that, well, your bid did not comply with the IFB. You were supposed to submit an explanation and you never did. So we also have the process. It might not normally be used for construction contracts, but we also have to remember that Ms. Asagi herself, she said that this is a proper process for construction projects. Even though it might not normally be used for construction contracts, it proves effective and it's not illegal. In fact, it's specifically authorized under the DOE's procurement regulations. It says that if multiple alternate bids are allowed, it shall specify their treatment. And here's exactly what it did. It allowed alternate bids, but it said you have to explain the terms of the alternate bid. So the DOE just simply can't raise its own mistakes to escape its own obligation. So finally, other DOE arguments, no award, inconsistent, and contradictory. No pre-construction meeting. We saw a host of witnesses say there was pre-construction meeting. It is simply pretextual justifications because they had an idea of what they wanted to do. And none of these support or rejection is before spin. So finally, let's talk about the remedies available. What do we do now, going forward? Well, one option, continue the procurement process as planned by the DOE, not GSA. GSA unlawfully entered the procurement after the process was finished. Now, GSA no longer even has authority. So let the DOE do what it wanted to do back in August and award the contract as before. Affirm the decision of the DOE. Under procurement law, a solicitation may only be canceled if it is determined administratively or under administrative and judicial review that a solicitation or award of a contract is in violation of the law. If DOE is asked that you cancel solicitation, start over. But you can't just cancel solicitation unless it's in violation of the law. But it's not. It's expressly authorized under the DOE's procurement regulations. Multiple alternate bids and proposals specifically provided for. So mere use of the alternate bid process cannot support cancellation. There's been no evidence presented that the alternate bid process was in any way in violation of the law. So you can't simply cancel the IFB at this point. So the relief request is referring to Award of C4. Now, if for some reason DOKA does not feel that the alternate bid process was proper or that there is another procedural irregularity in this IFB that would warrant restarting this process for the third time after 3 years of protest, the IFB need not be canceled. The real remedies are under procurement law. Now, like I said earlier, whether there was actual award or not, or whether it was just an attempt to award, that's not really the big issue here. So if the OPA finds that no award was made and that the DOE was right, then the OPA can simply revise the solicitation to comply with the law. And this is under 5415 of the procurement law. So either revise the solicitation to comply with the law or ratify and affirm the contract of Z4. And as I said, this is procurement law 5451. In this case, the OPA can easily revise solicitation to comply with the law. All you have to do is strike the alternate bid. There's no need to rewrite any specifications or modify it from an RFP to an IFB. You don't need to change it from a proposal to a request for bids or anything like that. All you do is strike the alternate bid. If that's the problem with the process, then strike the alternate bid. Neons wouldn't be prejudiced. They were able to participate, even though they ended up submitting the highest basic bid by several hundred thousand dollars. Finally, if the OPA finds that an award was made, then the OPA can simply ratify or affirm the contract of V4. And this is provided under Section 5452. But in this case, it's important to step back and see the forest through the trees. Here, GSA reversed the findings of the DOE employees and the agency itself. It had inconsistent positions and other contradictions. And it even bent over backwards to accommodate Eons and give them multiple opportunities to cure the defects in their bid. But they still couldn't do it, so they awarded Eons the bid on a promise. The real story of the IFB is that it seems like it was just a turf war at the time. And that GSA took over the procurement, and at the time, they wanted to make a point. They came up with any kind of justification that they could. The problem is that D4 and the students of Ocean View Middle School are the ones who are caught in the middle of this infighting between the DOE and GSA. Well, at this point, the turf war is over. GSA's short-lived supervision of the DOE is over. And so it's time to move on. It's time to get this project started. If the actions in this case by the GSA were not arbitrary and capricious, then the question would be, if not here, then when would they be? So we request the award to affirm the award of D4. Thank you.
Ms. Mooney? Do you need us to move any equipment out of the area?
Turn on the lights and turn off the thing.
Okay. Yeah. Is that the last one? I think
it'll ring my thing after that.
Yeah, that's
cool. Thank you. The instant action involves taxpayer money and public procurement. It's not an issue between private companies. And the law is pretty clear. I don't think it gets any more clear that you need to have a performance bond if you have a construction contract over $25,000. Here, we're talking about a construction contract for $810,000. The DOE, we brought in the insurance company for Z4 today to present testimony for you as to what the status really was as to what was going on in August of 2009 with regard to Z4's opportunity to present a performance bond. The time frame that we were told is a normal time period is 14 days. The request went out, I believe, dated August 6th, and they were supposed to submit by August 14th. They submitted a request for continuance for time to submit the performance bond with a letter from Alpha Insurers dated August 13th. Mr. DeRocco was in here, and he said, 14 days. 14 days from August 13th would have been August 27th. There's been no explanation why Z4 didn't just submit a performance bond. So I want to present that. And we assert that if there was any type of award or pursuit of award, solicitation award, without actually a performance bond coming in, it would be against the law, violation of the law. With regard to the overall nature of the fact scenario before us, it's not pretty. We started out the hearing with a motion and a request to dismiss because of arbitrary ambiguities and inconsistencies in the rebid as viewed in a record review of the procurement record at that time, and that was without Ms. Afaji off island and without the benefit of being able to ask her questions. We have since, in this process, brought forth even more sad information that the actual architect engineering drawings are not part of the rebid. It's actually out here that Z4 is seeking to be awarded a contract on. They weren't referenced in the rebid as being part of the rebid. They weren't provided to the bidders in the procurement records. They're not part of the procurement records. And the procurement record needs to be established at the time of award. It's one of the responsibilities of the administrator, supply manager, or the procurement officer that's making the award. And there's no establishment that record is there. If anything, what we've been seeing is there was a complete absence of that record. There were addendums that were issued in the initial bid process in this contract matter. And we've seen, we've heard from Mr. Alcantara himself that if he had received a written or oral inquiry that the process that needed to be followed was to issue a written addendum to the IFB process to all the bidders so that everyone would have the notice on that. And one of the written inquiries that came in was a question as to what about the brochures and literature? Do you need to submit it for all the products or just some of the products? There was no written response and no addendum issued in this the rebid IFB. The record's really clear on that. It's one of the questions that continues to come up. It's one of the questions that's been developed all the way throughout all the days of the hearing. The actual bid document in the rebid included two types of processes that we've been looking at. There was a checkbox that permitted an alternate bid and a basic bid to come in. And then there was a checkbox that required that the brochures and literature be submitted. And if you read the language in the IFB, it says for all products. The actual brochures and literature that came in, we've looked at the record that went out. We listened to Rod Trya say what he submitted out to TMRA for their review as to the brochures and literatures that he received. And they were not for all the various different products that are involved in an 810,000 construction project or reconstruction of a gym and refurbishment. None of the nuts and bolts are located on it. It fit on like three sheets. There were just certain products that were listed. Somewhere along the lines, it was narrowed down to those products. It's not in the procurement records. And it's not clear that the opportunity was presented to all the other 20 people that picked up the procurement packet as potential bidders. And there were actually five bid packets that were received as a response to the rebid IFB. We do not know about the other three bid packets. They were never evaluated as to whether they met the brochure literature specifications. They were inadvertently and not part of the process. You heard Mr. Trya just say that he took the two lowest. He took the alternate bid of the and the basic bid of B4. And that was the only two packages that went over to TMRA. You heard the testimony of Mr. Ruth, who has many years of experience as an architect and an engineer, that in this particular process, he was brought in to review. He was requested to review. It wasn't part of his contract with DOE to do so, to review the literature and brochure packets that were received. And that's what he was reviewing, to see whether those literature and brochure packets met specifications. And his July 16th letter made it clear that both V4 and EN did not. The facilities management people reviewed it, but they understood that in the construction process, that isn't part of what's normally there. And if you read the July 27th letter, what they're saying is that that is something that would be taken care of at the construction management hearing. There's a difference between a pre-construction management hearing or hearing and the actual construction. And we got that from Mr. Ruth when he took us through the details of what's normally involved with that. We listened to the procurement history from Mr. Garcia, who happened to have been like a buyer too at DOE. His supervisor was not present at the time of the opening of the actual bid on June 24th. It's clear on the record there's a sign-in sheet who's there and who evaluates the bids and the literature that comes in and what was received at that time. And there's clear in the record that Mr. Garcia says that at the time all the information came in the bid packages, that there was detailed information from EMS with regard to their basic bid and their alternate bid. It was received on June 24th and was part of the record. There is not an issue made with regard to the alternate bid of E.ON in the procurement history if you read through the documents up until August 6th of 2009 when there's a response by DOE to an inquiry or an appeal by E.ON, and that's when it's first raised. If you read through the actual documents, and that's glad she helped us understand what happens in the procurement process, there's a review and an analysis and a recommendation after the awards come in, and that's the step before their, or not the awards, after the bids come in. And that document is the June 30th document, and it's signed off on by both the buyer supervisor, Albert Garcia, and the administrator, supply manager of DOE. And the basis that they make their award to D4 set forth in the body of that letter. It has nothing to do with E.ON, who was the lowest bidder, not having submitted an explanation for their alternate bid. The context that all of this takes place in June and August and July of 2009 is not an ideal one, to say the least. The DOE delegated its procurement authority, and its DOE has procurement authority over construction contracts to GSA, along with the DOE's personnel. The actual physical office of the DOE was padlocked, and everything and all the procurement files and all the personnel went down to GSA, and the line authority is there. We are, in effect, merged as one entity at that point in this procurement history. And it's not something to be separated. And so if the DOE had authority to review any protest or to make any decisions, then the GSA did. It was a complete conduit to flow through. It's not something segregated. What you heard, we brought in all the various different people that looked at the file. This is Pete Sennicklitz. Everyone actually was reviewing the documents and moving through the process like they would with any ISD. When GSA got involved in reviewing the process, they examined this because it was a lower bidder. E.ON was $80,000 lower than the Ford Corporation in it. And so they wanted to make sure what took place was appropriate. And when they looked at the whole record, and that's what we heard Pete Sennicklitz say, that what they did was they worked with the lowest bidder because that was their process to do. And if in fact the clarifications weren't complete, that intention would be go to the next lowest bidder, which would have been Z4, if there was an issue with that. The fact that this, the technical drawings, which I think you saw the large roll that I brought over for the CDs, were not part of what was over there at GSA in the procurement file, and it wasn't part of the rebid process. It's there as that. But they didn't have it to look at because they didn't know that there was anything else to be compared with. They only looked at the technical portions that were part of the actual bid packet, which when Mr. Ruth was here, he saw me give it to him and think that that was a technical spec. And he pointed out to us, no, there was much more. And we went and verified what that was and then submitted it to you. It's the DOE GSA position that because of the whole procurement record in this matter, that the way to proceed to be in the best interest of the territory and the government is to go through a rebid process. It's what would make it fair and equitable to all the other potential bidders. It's necessary in order to have the instructions and the technical documents to be part of a potential build and to resolve other issues. And we believe that there was not an award made. But even if you found that there was, we would then ultimately argue that any award would have been in violation of the law because there was no performance bond. And here there was no performance bond submitted with even a reasonable period of time. And then you have the stock 14 days, which is in the industry. And you even had Mr. Alcantara say that he thought it would be within a few days, but definitely no later than, you know, a week or so in his testimony on the issue. Thank you very much.
Mr. Jackson, any brief rebuttal?
Very quick. I'm sure I'm tired of hearing me talk. First, I just have, let's see here, 4 points. One, the DOE council said that public funds, so you can't have an award without a bond. Well, we heard testimony from Mr. Alcantara that the Guam law does provide for a substituted security to help stall businesses. Now, we're not saying that you aren't required to have a performance bond, but just to protect the agency until the performance bond is acquired, there is a substituted security is allowed in the Guam law. We heard testimony to that effect. Now, we just heard that 2 weeks is the standard of thing to get a performance bond. And Ms. Afaji said she's never seen anything more than 2 weeks. Well, Mr. San Nicolas, he also said that, well, you know, they're about 2 weeks, but not submitting a performance bond in 2 weeks would not support rejection. He simply said it would delay the signing of the bid. That's Mr. San Nicolas. That's the number two at GSA. Third, as far as the responses to inquiries, and there is one regarding in clarification about what time to submit the materials for alternate bids, any problem with the procurement process that occurs at opening, that's when it's ripe. And no bidder submitted a protest for any issue at the time or 2 weeks after the time of opening. And that's when they're due. So at this point, any council is concerned, I understand that for the prejudiced potential bidders, that these requests needed to be responded to. But people that picked up packets are all potential bidders. And if there was a problem with the process, they would have raised that timely after 2 weeks after opening. That was like 6 months ago, or 8, 9 months ago. Now, I believe it's disingenuous at this point for the DOE to try to subvert its own procurement process based upon protests that never came. Third, as far as the GSA authority, council indicated that GSA had the authority to do a construction project because the DOE had authority. Well, as we saw, it was GSA that did all of these activities, not the DOE. Now, the governor and GSA was given the authority by the governor, and we saw an executive order, or this is Exhibit 24, it's the August 10th letter, and it was the question of the superintendent approved by Felix Camacho, Governor Felix Camacho. But it's black letter law that the governor cannot alter the authority vested in a government agency by the legislature. The legislature would have to act to give GSA authority for construction contracts. That's not up to the governor. And I know there's authority in specific procurement issues that the governor cannot alter the authority between the agencies. That's the legislature's job.
Now, finally, we do understand that it's in the best interest of the territory to have a streamlined procurement process. But in this case, the best interest of the territory was testified to of mesophagy was that we need to get this gym built. That's the best interest of the territory now. So if the DOE wants, so the DOE shouldn't be looking for reasons to subvert its own procurement process. Let's get this gym built. Mesophagy, the head of GSA, said that these kids are dying, they need a gym. So the best issue of the territory is not to start over from scratch for the third time for a project that was bid 3 years ago. We have D4, they're ready to go, we have responsible bidder. Let's go, let's get this project moving. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take this matter under advisement and issue a written decision within 30 days of today's date. One quick change to my January 22nd, 2010 scheduling order. The brief for remedies was originally due on the 24th of February, but due to the fact that I granted the purchasing agency's motion to recess the hearing until today, I'm going to extend that time to Wednesday, April the 7th at 5 o'clock. Now, the parties may, they're not required to, but they may submit a brief concerning the remedies that they think or they feel are appropriate in this case. So, the deadline again for that brief, if the parties so choose to file one, is April the 7th at 5 o'clock p.m. Okay? And these hearings are now adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Off the record at 5:30.